Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show that Mark Twain once called smarter'n a blue jay what can talk possum and faster'n a naked fat man riding a bolt of lightning. So here's your plain-spoken homespun host, Eric Metaxas.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Have you heard of the Eric Metaxas Show? I'm Eric Metaxas. It's a show. Typically, I talk to people about all kinds of topics. I mean, there's no question. This is an eclectic show. Sometimes we cover current events. Sometimes we cover subjects of controversy. Sometimes we talk to scientists. Sometimes we talk to historians. Sometimes we talk to comedians. In fact, tomorrow we're talking to one of my favorite comedians, Victoria Jackson. I can't wait for that. But today we're diving really into the deep end of the pool with current events, with something about which I confess almost proudly that I know very, very little. Some of you are familiar with the Plandemic documentary that went out. It was so controversial that Facebook like shut it down, and they shut me down also. I don't know if it's related to that, but probably I sent something out related to it. We're living in weird times where we, the people, are having to kind of step up our game to figure out what's real, what's fake, what's right, what's wrong, what is properly controversial and what is unnecessarily controversial. So the issue of what's going on with viruses and vaccines and Dr. Fauci and Dr. Judy Mikovits, I hope I'm pronouncing it slightly correctly. It's all been very confusing to me, and I know to many of you. Some of you you're all settled on this. You've all figured it out, and you know what side you're taking, and you've got the book Plague of Corruption. I am still in the camp of the ignorant. I really don't know what I think, and I think we have to be careful. We need to have proper skepticism without becoming cynical. We need to be open-minded to different ideas. And it's very upsetting to me when in a country like this, we shut down ideas. There's something very scary to me. It's a bad precedent. And that is one of the reasons that I wanted to have the co-author of Plague of Corruption on my program. His name is Kent Heckenlively, and he is my guest today. Kent, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much for having me on, Eric. I'm a big fan of yours. I've read a number of your books.
I'm really frightened by that. Nobody's supposed to read my books. They're just supposed to buy them, but don't read them. Don't waste your time. Okay, now listen, Kent.
I loved your book on Martin Luther, especially because supposedly he's an ancestor of mine. Supposedly a daughter of Martin Luther married a Heckenlively. And so I'm supposedly a Luther descendant causing trouble with the biggest empire of our day.
Well, you know what? That's not a bad credential. Now, listen, I said up front, I am so ignorant of this. I'm not playing games when I say that. I don't know what I think. I have a lot of views. I tend to be skeptical of Dr. Fauci, just because we all know, you don't need to be a scientist or up on vaccines and things to understand that when you allow doctors to set policy for the country, it can cause a lot of other kinds of harm. And so the nation right now, we the people are trying to figure out what is too much shutdown, what is right, what is wrong. It's very tough. And I can't in my lifetime remember a time where we've been here. So when I saw Dr. Judy, how do you say it?
Mikovits.
When I saw her on a few interview shows, I thought, wow, what is this? This is amazing. And then I realized that there's this the book out, Plague of Corruption. I know that you're the co-author of that book. And I know that Dr. Robert, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is rather famously anti-vaccine, the son of RFK himself, he wrote the foreword to the book. So keeping in mind that I and most of my audience are really genuinely ignorant a lot of these subjects, help us understand what we're missing. And first of all, before we even begin that, tell us, you know, who you are and how you come to co-author the book with Dr. Mikovits.
Well, I'm an attorney. I practiced for about 15 years. And then about 15 years ago, I became a middle school science teacher. So I just love science. And I think I also have, with my legal training, I think I have a skeptical approach to things. I want to see data. I've known Dr. Mikovits for 10 years. We've done two books together, Plague, which was published in 2014, which has been a consistent bestseller, but nobody even mentions it. It's a very thick book. It's very scientific. It is actually, you can get it as an e-textbook. So our first book was completely ignored. This one, Plague of Corruption, has gotten amazing attacks. What's important to say is this was written before the COVID outbreak. So there's a lot of misinformation. We have zero information on COVID in here. But what we do have is patterns of corruption that we see. So let me go straight to what I think the big fight is and what I never see covered in the news, which is our main argument. So when you make a vaccine, what you do is you take a virus from a human being, okay? And then what you do is you run it through animal tissue, okay? And because you run it through the species of a different animal, most times, or many of the times, what you get is a less pathogenic virus. But then you have to understand how small a virus is. So your listeners have probably...
I'm sorry, even just to parade my ignorance, when you say less pathogenic, you mean less harmful.
Less dangerous.
When you pass the virus through the flesh of a different animal, in other words, what you're looking to do is to get something that will immunize someone without infecting someone. Is that the idea?
Exactly. So basically the original observation was that milkmaids didn't get smallpox, but they got something called cowpox. Okay, so you would get the blisters from cowpox and give that to people. So the science of that is really clear to me. I agree 100% with that. The problem is your typical virus is about a million times smaller than a cell, okay? So you're not just getting that pure weakened virus back. They have to get a lot of other biological material back from that animal. And so what happens is you get all those animal viruses back. And not just in vaccines, but there's a whole class of medicines called biologics, okay? So that is human, you know, animal tissue. And so, you know, I have a lot of friends who are vegetarians and they, you know, don't want to eat meat, but they take their vaccines. And I'm saying, do you understand that there's animal biological tissue being injected into your veins? And so there's also...
Just so I'm clear. In other words, you're saying that we cannot, it's impossible to inject a pure virus without something around it. In other words, do you need the animal tissue so that the virus can enter the bloodstream of a human?
Yes. So you have to have the animal tissue or animal biological material there. That animal biological material will be contaminated with viruses. So human beings are about 7% silenced viruses in our genetic code. Well, we have to assume that animals are roughly similar. So suddenly, but you have that biological material, which is outside the body. And what happens is when you mix that in culture, all the viruses come out and play, and viruses are very promiscuous and can recombine. So what we think is that there are all these viruses in the vaccines that were never intended to be there, but because everything was kind of grandfathered in, because this is sort of like 1920s, 1930s technology. And, you know, we've got wonderful technology. And so I say, yes, I'm an anti-vaxxer, okay? But I have a reason for it. And as a science teacher, I say, hey, here's the way to test it. We have so many wonderful viral detection tools. I mean, you have like little chips that you can, you know, you can put a biological sample on it and see what's in there. All we have to do is do the same thing with vaccines. And I think what we're going to find is our vaccines are contaminated with all these animal and human viruses from the manufacturing process. But nobody in the mainstream media seems to want to talk about that.
Kent, forgive me. We're going to go to a break. We're going to be right back to continue this conversation with Kent Heckenlively. Folks, the book is Plague of Corruption. Don't go away. Hey there, folks. This is Eric from Taxi Show. I'm talking to Kent Heckenlively, the co-author of a very controversial book, it seems, Plague of Corruption. It's a runaway bestseller because it deals with some of the things that a lot of us are trying to process right now. Kent, you were just explaining to us why some people like yourself are against the idea of vaccines, because you're saying that when you're vaccinated against virus X, you are potentially being infected with a host of other unknown viruses, which are in the tissue surrounding the vaccine, and it seems inevitable. So it's a dangerous thing. So what are you suggesting, or what are you and Dr. Judy Mikovits, who's your co-author on this, what do you suggest be done? In other words, it seems to me, if it's so clear, why wouldn't the medical establishment be willing to take steps along the lines you're suggesting? What is their issue?
Well, you know, one of my favorite commentators is Scott Adams, the Dilbert cartoonist and political person. And what he talks about is how you know there's a situation where corruption is going to develop. And a couple of things need to be there. One is you need to have a high rate of return and little chance of getting caught. Now, there's something called the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which took vaccines out of the regular court system and put them into a special court with very different rules of evidence. And so right now, if you say that a vaccine injured your kid, you don't go up against pharma attorneys in a regular court. You have to go to a special vaccine court where the vaccines are basically defended by Department of Justice attorneys. The rules of evidence are much different. For example, if a toaster catches fire and burns down my kitchen, I can sue the company, and in discovery, I can say, give me all the complaints you've had about toasters burning things down, and they have to give it to me. No right like that exists in vaccine court. And in fact, you can only get that with the permission of the court. And normally also in court cases, what happens is, let's say Robert F. Kennedy goes after Monsanto for Roundup and he wins a $2.2 billion verdict against Monsanto. Well, then every person afterwards who goes in can say, Robert F. Kennedy won a $2.2 billion verdict against Monsanto for this product. No right like that exists in vaccine court. Every single person, it's like they're proving it all over again. So we think that this,
the vaccine court is sort of somehow outside of our regular system of jurisprudence. I'm not clear on what is a vaccine court, or where does it exist? I'm not quite clear on
it. It exists in Washington, D.C. They have people who are special masters. And so it's outside of the regular products liability. And in fact, what was really interesting for my previous book, Inoculated, I actually interviewed the chief special master, who's equivalent to the chief justice. He'd been that for like 25 years. And even he, in my interview, his name is Gary Golkowitz. He said that the court isn't working. It's not delivering justice the way it should. And I asked him, and I also asked the Stanford law professor, Nora Freeman Engstrom, who's one of the few people who studied the court, whether the court should be done away with and whether it was actually protecting people. And both of them said, well, that's outside my area of expertise. And I thought, my God, if I can't even get a Stanford law professor to tell me whether something's a good idea or not, people need to start talking about this.
Well, what I don't understand, and I honestly, as I said earlier, I have no position on this because I am far too ignorant. It's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on to begin to understand what we're even talking about. Why would so many in the medical establishment be so strongly against this? In other words, I'm trying to understand is, you know, vaccines are a way of life for most Americans. And it seems to me if there were evidence that they were dangerous, it ought not to be so difficult to talk about it. Why is it so difficult to talk about? In other words, if somebody like Dr. Fauci is, you know, genuinely malevolent in this, why would that be? In other words, help me to understand how this got even to be controversial. That's what really I don't even understand.
Well, you're a historian. You know, you look at things like you look at Martin Luther going up against the Catholic Church. It seemed like Luther was asking very reasonable questions. And the problem is right now, what happens is, unfortunately, a lot of things have been grandfathered in before they really understood it. And, you know, one of the things that I go into in my book Inoculated, or actually I go into in Plague of Corruption, is there have been some whistleblowers in the vaccine court. A guy named Dr. Andrew Zimmerman, who was actually the government's own medical witness. He was at Johns Hopkins Kennedy Krieger Institute. And he was ready to testify in 2007 that at least 30% of the autism cases were due to vaccines. Well, when I ran the numbers, because there was about a million kids with autism at that time, I figured it was basically a $900 billion liability. And he said that on a Friday, and they fired him over the weekend. And then on a Monday, they, you know, they were in court and they said, oh, we know Zimmerman's opinion on this. You know, Cheryl Atkinson has reported on this. So you can just, you know, type in Dr. Andrew Zimmerman, Cheryl Atkinson, and you will find his confession because she has written about it. So the problem is it's a huge liability. And what we're saying is, you know, look, this is an enormous liability. We think they've caused a lot of harm. But if they actually admitted the truth and they started working to solve it, it's not a $900 billion problem. It's maybe $500 million because we think that there are a lot of therapies out there, specifically a lot of the HIV AIDS therapies, which could be deployed against these viruses and would be very successful. So the only problem is somebody has to say, we really messed up. And that's a hard thing to do.
It seems to me from what little I have looked into on this, and I, you know, apologize to you and my audience for my ignorance, although maybe it can be good sometimes because I don't have a dog in this fight. It seems that what Dr. Mikovits alleges in her book is that Dr. Fauci was extremely vindictive toward her and tried to harm her. Now, why? Tell us a little bit about that, because that I don't understand. I don't want to think ill of anyone, and I want to try to understand why someone would do something. And I've tried to read on this. It's confusing. But do you see Fauci as a bad actor, or did he get sucked into something and he just feels that he's doing his job?
I see more of a bad system, Eric. You know, let's talk about Tony Fauci. He's 79 years old. He has been in charge of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases since 1984. That's 36 years. J. Edgar Hoover was in charge of the FBI for 37 years. You know, just as Americans, we just don't like this idea of people having this kind of power, you know, 5-10 years maybe. That should be it. Bring new people in. But, you know, if Trump was going to be president for 36 years, I think people would have a problem with that.
That's significant. I did not know that he'd been there that long. That's actually extraordinary. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. I just made that up. That's pretty good, right? Well, let me just say that.
I never heard that one before.
I don't. Yes. Well, it's of my coinage. People like to claim that Lord Acton or somebody said it, but I just said it now. Let me ask you, Fauci's actions against Dr. Mikovits. Can you tell us a little bit about that for people who aren't up on this?
Yeah, so her big controversy was over XMRV, which is a mouse virus that she found in high numbers in people with chronic fatigue syndrome, primarily women. Okay, so there was going to be a validation study led by Ian Lipkin of Columbia University. Okay, one of the things that Mikovits had said is that in order to detect the virus in with current technology, you need the sickest of the chronic fatigue syndrome patients. Okay, so she said that the people who were looking for these patients were choosing the wrong patients. The person that she felt did the best job was a guy named Dr. Jose Montoya of Stanford University. Well, Fauci stepped in and stopped Montoya's samples from being part of that study. So, you know, the study also found 6% of people with chronic fatigue syndrome have this virus and 6% of controls. A couple of years later, Lipkin comes out and talks about the Montoya samples, and he says 86% of those with chronic fatigue syndrome in this cohort have the virus and only 6% of controls don't, but we're not going to make any conclusion whether that's related to disease or not. And given the experience in chronic fatigue, we're not going to say that. And I thought, that's just crazy. That's crazy talk. I mean, so.
Hang on a second. Kent, forgive me because we've got these breaks. We're going to be right back, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Kent Heckenlively, the co-author of Plague of Corruption with Dr. Judy Mikovits. This is controversial and important. Don't go away.
Got on board a westbound 7.
Christian bestselling author and speaker Richard E. Simmons does not shy away from the big questions of life. His latest book is called Reflections on the Existence of God, and it tackles the biggest question of all, does God exist? I've read this book, and I got to tell you, I'm a little biased, but you can imagine that I like it a lot because Simmons offers insights for those grappling with life's biggest questions. Where do we find meaning in life? Who determines what is evil? Can we be moral without God? Does God even exist? Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, I've taught apologetics for many years and I've read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read. This book is easy to read because it's divided into a series of brief essays, perfect for a devotional or discussion with a friend. I highly recommend that you add a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God to your pandemic reading list. Simmons asks questions that speak directly to one of the most important things you possess, your worldview. Folks, you know how important this is to me. Your worldview is going to impact the way you live your life for better or for worse. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, and I hope you do, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. Dive in today by picking up a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God right now. Go to existenceofgodbook.com. That's existenceofgodbook.com. Welcome back. I'm talking to the co-author of Plague of Corruption with Dr. Judy Mikovits, Kent Heckenlively. I always have to glance down, Kent, because your name is similar to our other guest today, Ryan Helfenbein. Okay, so tell me, Kent, you were just saying that Dr. Fauci, this is some years ago, seemed to be opposed to Dr. Mikovits's research. Now, why, let's guess, let's try to understand, why would he be opposed to what was going on? I'm not really understanding what his, what is he protecting, or what would you perceive that he's protecting or upset about? Because I don't get it.
Well, the problem is what he's protecting is the way medicine is done these days, because you have, I mean, the labs and all the pharma companies are set up to use these animal tissues, okay? They're also using a lot of aborted human fetal tissue, which we think also has some problems with it. Now
let me hit pause.
Yeah.
Aborted human fetal tissue. I have never heard that.
Yeah.
That sounds like a crazy rumor. Help me to understand what you just said, because if that's true, of course, it's very horrifying.
All you have to do is go to the inserts for any vaccines, and they'll talk about human fetal tissue, I think, you know, it'll be like WR5, MR31. So they're using aborted human fetal tissue. I mean, you can go on, you can actually type in vaccines, aborted human fetal tissue, and you'll come up with articles from NPR, and they're saying, oh, no, this is right. So, you know, I joke.
But the point is, if that's true, that has got to be against, like, every known religion. I mean, every known religion would be opposed to having, it has nothing to do with your views on abortion. It has to do with your views on using human tissue, on injecting ourselves with human tissue. I'm surprised I've not heard of that before. That's, I don't want to, you know, put out false information, but I do have to say that if that is even slightly true, that puts a different color on this whole thing.
So, Eric, I'm going to hold you harmless, okay? I will say, Eric Metaxas is not saying aborted human fetal tissue is being used in vaccines, but he wants the question answered. So, there you go. I've completely
relieved you of any
liability.
I am, as I say, I'm, you know, semi-proudly ignorant on all this stuff, but I've never even heard that before. That's horrifying. Oh, let's just go to where we are now. What has prompted Dr. Mikovits to come out and talk? In other words, is this something related specifically to this pandemic? What is happening right now that has stirred the pot, other than the fact that Fauci is out there, you know, every day behind the podium?
You know, what's hilarious about that question is we haven't suddenly come out. I mean, our book was published in 2014. She's been consistently out there and talking. You know, our book Plague of Corruption came out, and, you know, I was going to be pitching it as a woman in science story. And then suddenly the pandemic started and everybody seemed to, you know, glom onto it. So we've been talking for, you know, 6-7 years about these things and you know, what happened to her in 2011. So, you know, I've been pushing this story for 10 years. And so it's not like we suddenly came out. It's, to us, it's kind of like, hey, finally somebody started paying attention to what we've been saying.
I got it. And so your position then would be that vaccines, generally speaking, are to be avoided because of all these risks that you've been enumerating.
Well, here's a simple thing. I'm not even going to say that. I'm going to say, look, medical establishment, scientific establishment, you have all these great viral detection tools. Why don't you just put like the 15 or 20 vaccines that are given to children on these chips? Tell me what's there. You know, this lab in Italy, Corbella, had done that, and they published it, and they found all these viruses in it. And oh, lo and behold, 4 months later, they were raided by the government. Surprise, surprise.
Well, no, see, this is the thing. It's like when I hear stuff like this, I'm not one of these people who discounts what you've just said. At the same time, I want to have enough healthy skepticism to say, I don't know what to make of it. And, you know, when people talk about governments raiding things and stuff, I'd of course like to believe that in most cases that stuff is not happening. But let me go below what you've just said and sort of ask, why would the medical establishment be opposed to something as simple as you've described? In other words, this doesn't sound complicated. You've made it at least sound simple enough that I can understand it. If there are viruses within these vaccines that ought not to be there, or that may be not good, may be dangerous, why wouldn't we want to know that? It's not difficult to find out. Why wouldn't they go to this trouble? Is it because you're saying that they don't want to be liable for all of the autism cases in the world? I'm not really clear on what.
And chronic fatigue syndrome, and probably a lot of the neurodegenerative disease of age. This is trillions of dollars of liability. Okay, so I do have one final story, but I know we're kind of coming up on an end right now. So I'll share that story on the other side.
Yeah. Well, okay. We're gonna go to a break. I want to be clear that this is for lay people. This is very hard to follow. When I listened to Dr. Mikovits, I found myself being thoroughly confused. And so we're just trying to to bring some clarity to this issue, because this is way too important to ignore. We're going to be right back, folks. I'm talking to the co-author of Plague of Corruption. Don't go away.
Set an open course for the Virgin Sea.
Hey, folks, welcome back. I'm here with the co-author of Plague of Corruption, Kent Heckenlively. Kent, you were just about to share a story. Go ahead.
Yeah, so here I'm a middle school science teacher, okay, in addition to having a law degree. So I think it was around 2012, 2013. I got a summer internship at Lawrence Livermore National Labs, and I got into a virus lab, okay? So I'm you know, at one of our top national laboratories. And one of the things that they did was they brought all of us, you know, 40 or 50 science teachers together to do the dog and pony show about what wonderful things Lawrence Livermore is doing. So the guy giving a talk was Dr. Paul Jackson, who's a leading scientist. And, you know, he's going down all these wonderful things that the National Lab is doing. And then he mentions that they recently had used one of their viral chips, viral detection chips, on the Rotatec vaccine, which was developed by a guy named Dr. Paul Offit. And he said, very proudly, he said to all of the science teachers, and we discovered that there was a pig virus contaminating this vaccine. And so that was really important to find. And so, you know, stupid old me, I raise my hand and I say, Dr. Jackson, could you tell me how much more pig virus there was in that vaccine than the virus that you wanted to have there? And he says, oh, there was about 10 times more pig virus than the virus we hoped to find there. And I raise my hand again and I say, excuse me, but as I understand it, you know, long-term viral exposure often leads to cancer. That's, you know, why they've got the HPV vaccine. You know, and I said, have you done any studies about, you know, whether this pig virus might be contributing to cancer? And he says, no, that would take a long time. And it's like, I almost got the feeling that he said, like, yeah, kid, you're asking a good question, but, you know, the decision was made above my pay grade. So I kind of feel like the scientists, and we've been getting so much support from scientists and doctors who, when we say these things, they say, that makes sense. So I really think it's an enormous liability, and you really don't need to look much further than that.
Well, so then why would people who are pushing vaccines push vaccines? In other words, let's say they've got to know that there are some risks involved. Maybe they don't want to talk about the risks. Maybe they don't want to get in trouble. Maybe they don't want, but it seems to me that the easiest thing for them to do would be to back off pushing vaccines.
I think that once this, you know, dam breaks, it's really going to break. And so I think they are trying as hard as they can. You know, it was really interesting. Chuck Todd on Meet the Press went after Plague of Corruption this weekend. And it was hilarious for me to watch because he talks about conspiracy theories and he says, there's this book out there and this video. And he says, but I'm not going to mention the name of the book because I don't even want to give any, you know, oxygen to this fire. And I thought, wow, I've really become vulnerable.
Why would somebody like Chuck Todd care one way or the other? In other words, I'm not clear on that.
Okay, so watch Meet the Press. Count the number of pharmaceutical commercials. You will probably find anywhere from 40 to 60% of the evening news is brought to you by the pharmaceutical companies. It's that simple. Are you going to go after an advertiser that big? No. Are you going to let negative stories play? No.
Who else is out there who is, I mean, aside from RFK Jr., who else is out there that is aware of this and that's talking about this?
You know, the person who endorsed our book, Dr. Luc Montagnier from France, who has the Nobel Prize for the discovery of the HIV retrovirus. I've just been exchanging emails with him because, you know, he endorsed our book and everything. And he's been so excited about the success it's having. And so, you know, he's you know, say, I mean, to
the man who discovered the HIV virus. That's who this is.
Yeah. Luc Montagnier. Yeah. It's right on the cover of our book. And so he, you know, when you get an email from a Nobel Prize winner saying you're doing God's work, Kent, that's pretty inspiring.
Actually, he's the one. He was quoted on this program by Diana West some weeks ago as saying rather clearly that the Wuhan virus was obviously made in a lab, and that it had, I guess that he saw some elements of HIV in it. But I know it was he who said that, according to Diana West.
Yeah, because what you do, and this is kind of like the level of stupidity that we talk about. You know, we think it's really stupid to mix animal and human tissue together, but it's another level of stupidity to do it intentionally with something called gain of function research. Now, the coronaviruses from the bats generally don't infect human beings. So what we believe that they were doing, and they actually reported that they were doing this, is they ran it through the species of different animals like monkeys. And, you know, they pick up an HIV spike protein, and suddenly that Wuhan virus can infect human beings, because we can get infected by monkey viruses pretty easily, but we couldn't get infected by these corona bat viruses. So whenever you see something called gain of function research, and you know, you can research this. Basically, scientists in 2013 in the United States said this was such dangerous research that they prohibited it in the United States. It was prohibited for about 4 years, from 2013 to 2017. And then, you know, it got lifted. But during that time, Tony Fauci, with a $3.7 million grant from his agency, supporting the Wuhan Institute to see if they could make coronaviruses infect humans. And to me, this is like madness. I mean, the entire world is shut down for something that was probably a lab experiment gone wrong.
This is unbelievable. My friend John Zmirak, who's a frequent contributor to this program, he mentioned that Fauci was involved in this kind of research until fairly recently. I think everyone is on a learning curve with this stuff, Kent. We're trying to follow it, and you know, when something like this happens, this pandemic, a lot of people are just drinking from a fire hose. And so I want to thank you for being willing to come on and answer my questions. I think this has to be the beginning of a longer conversation, because there is so much here, and because even just now I've learned a number of things that are important to continue the conversation. So I want to thank you. Congratulations on talking about this. I don't know what I think yet, but I do think it's very important in the United States of America that we're willing to talk about things. So thanks for coming on the program. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your courage and having me on.
You bet. Folks, how about that conversation with Kent Heckenlively? It was it was pretty lively, wouldn't you say, Albin? That was, I mean, I have to say that I just don't know what I think, and so I'm willing to talk to different people on this.
Yeah. Well,
you look nervous. What's the matter?
I don't know. It's a lot to think about. He gave us a lot to think about. I'm a little, you know, concerned.
Who wants to think that the medical establishment is behaving in this way? I would prefer to ignore it and prefer to pretend that it's not happening. But if it is happening, look, we hear all kinds of bad stuff about big pharma, right? Yeah. And human beings tend to be corrupt when there's no oversight, when there's no virtue. It's possible. And I think that, unfortunately, it's incumbent on us to try to figure it out. So
It can be spooky. You're
scaring us. Before we end the program today, I want to remind people the TBN show is on every Friday night at 6 p.m. Folks, don't miss it. Tape it. I think it's going to be the Ravi Zacharias show. We're going to do an extended version of that. You can, of course, see it on my YouTube channel. It was 10 months ago But if you go to the Eric Metaxas show on YouTube, but if you watch the TBN show, I think we'll try to get that up by tomorrow night. If not, we'll have it up in a week from now. I also want to mention that we are coming down to the wire with our Angel Tree campaign for sending kids to summer camp whose parents are incarcerated. And if we can't send them to summer camp, we want to send them a care package. We really need your help. I know there are folks out there who can help significantly, and I'm talking to you folks specifically. We need your help. Just supporting Angel Tree and Prison Fellowship in general is a tremendous investment in the future of this country. When you're helping the children of prisoners, helping them to get a toehold, you know, so that they can work their way out of the situations in which most of them find themselves, you're doing God's work. I just want to tell you, we all need to care about prisoners. It's a mark of how of a civilization. How does it care for the poor? How does it care for prisoners? And the children of prisoners, the most vulnerable of all. So I want to encourage you to go to metaxastalk.com. I know we have a phone number. I don't know, Albin, if you have that phone number.
I do have that phone number.
The number, because a lot of people would prefer to make the phone call right now.
They would.
And I would say to them, you know, please do.
Yes, it's 888-206-2793. 888-206-2793. Okay.
I mean, I don't know if we need to make a fun video with that as a jingle. I don't know what we need to do to motivate people, but I got to tell you, folks, this is such a great cause. All of us know, we know that we've got to give back, that, you know, we're supposed to use whatever we can, however God has blessed us, we need to give back. The question is how and how much. Well, we try to vet these organizations to give you an opportunity to do something really beautiful, and in a way that, you know, for very little money, it goes very far. I mean, to send a kid to camp for a whole week for $200, that's outrageous. That's amazing. And these kids are in difficult urban environments, typically, you know, hard environments. To not have a parent at home, to have a parent in prison that you don't get to see, it's tough stuff. And we get to do something about it. It's a free country, and we get to step up. So we want to encourage you to go to either metaxastalk.com and click on the link and give that way. It's very easy. We've set it up. It's extremely easy. Metaxastalk.com. You'll see the link and just click on it. Or you can call 888-206-2793. You can do it literally now. 888-206-2793. We are depending on you, and these kids are depending on you. 888-206-2793. We wouldn't go on and on about it if it weren't a wonderful thing. I promise you, folks, this is a tremendous, tremendous organization, tremendous cause. 888-206-2793. God bless you as you give. Thank you. All right.